When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
Somebody's back from vacation. Somebody is back from charting Chris Sale pitches on Twitter. Oh my goodness. 93, 95, 96, 93, 92. His name is Greg Bedard, and this is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cattles. It's brought to you by Cuban Rounds, a handcrafted, all-natural, and affordably priced cigar that is Havana-inspired. Fantastic stuff. We'll give you more info on that a little bit later. Before we get into the football, Greg, and of course, it is here, first practice tomorrow. How was the vacay? You feeling nice, relaxed, energized, ready to go?
I was right up until I had to wake up this morning and get Bill Belichick grunting at me at 8:30 in the morning. So, it's made for a long day. There'll be plenty of those. But, it was great. And I tell you the truth, I forgot about the Chris Sale thing till you mentioned it. And we might as well give our listeners a little Chris Sale update. For those that don't know, baseball is actually my sport. I went to Rutgers. I played baseball. I coach softball and baseball a lot now. And so I love the game and getting out there. It was great. On the way up to Maine, where we were going in Maine, Chris Sale had a start. So we stopped off in the Portland Sea Dogs. The people there were terrific with us. And the family got to enjoy the game. I got to work a little bit. Saw Sale. I thought he was sensational in his first start. I mean, he was untouchable. Everything was working for him. His second start, you know, Nick, I will say, and he just thought that he was missing over the middle of the plate, which I guess could be expected. And it's his second start. So coming back from Tommy John. So right. not everything's going to be an upward trajectory when that happens. And so, I will say, as a Red Sox fan in my core, I was a little cautioned by the second start because there were a couple times in that, and if people aren't familiar, so he cruised through the first two innings, 13 pitches, 9 strikes each time. Third inning, he gives up a double, wall ball, a home run, a wall ball double. The home run was over the left center field scoreboard there at Hadlock Field. And they hit him around hard. Other than a bunt single, they were all hit hard. And the thing that concerned me a little bit, and I want to see how he bounces back in Worcester on Saturday. I will not be there for that, but I'm sure I'll find some way to watch it. When he was trying for that jam in the third, and they had first and third. Did we just lose me?
No, I hear you.
Okay. There's something happened with my camera, so sorry for dealing with that. But anyways, so when he was trying to get out of that jam a couple times, you could tell he really tried to gas it up. In his first start, he touched 98 a couple times. He was 96, 97 consistently. This time it was only like 93, 94, 95. And when he was trying to get out of that jam, he really could only get up to 94 and he was having a tough time. But so I was a little cautious about that. But other than that, he was in good spirits. He looks like he's going to help the club, and it looks like it's going to be perfect timing.
Interesting next couple of days for the Red Sox, obviously. Friday is the trading deadline. They've been linked with Max Scherzer. They've been linked with Anthony Rizzo. So some big names out there. We'll see what Chaim Bloom does. And, you know, hey, listen, I think he's playing with house money. I don't know how many people expected. Before the season, you know, began, I said 85 wins, and I had people tweeting at me that I was crazy to say 85 wins. And so, you know, I think this team is better than anybody expected. They're a lot of fun to watch. I mean, they're the antithesis of last year. You know, I was working at EEI last year doing some late nights. Of course, the only year I did late nights at EEI, I get stuck with a terrible Red Sox team. And as soon as I leave, whammo, they're a lot of fun to watch and they're winning baseball games. So hopefully that continues. All right, let's get into the football. Training camp, as I said, is here. First practice is tomorrow. You sat back. You listened to Bill Belichick drone at you today, as you said. But he was asked about the quarterback position. Have a feeling he's going to be asked about the quarterback position every single day he stands up there at the podium. Did he signal a competition today, Greg, at that quarterback position?
A little bit, Nick. I think a lot of people might have gone a little bit overboard with it, but you got to look at a couple of facts. Number one, Bill Belichick didn't mention one player by name during his press conference, and I think it was that's by design. I think it's, you know, it's all centered about the team. It's all about the team. And I also went back and I looked at his comments from last year and look, you know, Cam was new to the organization, but Bill had very similar comments back then. But I do think, you know, he brought up a clean slate a bunch of times. I mean, to me, Nick, I don't know how you view it, but the only guy who needs a clean slate really on this team, you know, that's going to be a major factor, could be a major factor, is Cam Newton. Yeah. Because second and a half of the season was bad. And so now they bring in all this talent, second year in the system, knock on wood, no COVID for him, all that stuff. And so to me, I think he was signaling like Cam's got a clean slate. And so, you know, we're starting back at zero with everybody, but you guys might think that he stunk up the joint last year, but me, Bill Belichick, I don't even know about last season. I don't know what you're talking about because he's got a clean slate and we're going to go. And I think to me, Nick, I think I haven't really changed on where we've been this offseason. I think that Cam is probably at least 1A entering camp with Mac as a 1B. And then we'll sort of see how it goes. I mean, look, the first week is not going to be very competitive. And Bill even said today, well, we're not going to be in pads for several days. So they start on Wednesday. First 2 days are in helmets. Friday and Saturday are in shells. They have to have a day off on Sunday. Pads go on Monday. That's when the competition starts. So the next few days are going to be a refresher for everybody. Cam better be on point with all that stuff. Make sure Mac's not too far ahead of him because everybody's going to hit the ground running on Monday. And I say the scoreboard starts on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this competition, and I do think it is a competition, I expect Mac Jones to be the starting quarterback at some point this year. I'm just trying to figure out when that's going to be, and it's probably up to Mac. I don't think Belichick will choose politics over play. You know, he didn't do that with Brady and Bledsoe. Yeah. You know, he doesn't do the PR thing, right? He didn't do it in Cleveland with Kozar. He got killed for that. He's not worried about those kinds of decisions and how they are read by the fans. He let Brady walk. Obviously, it backfired last year, but he's not worried about PR. If Mac Jones outplays Cam, I think he gets the gig. I think that he has to outplay him by a decent amount, though. I think if it's close, then you probably see Cam start the season, and then maybe you revisit that week after week, or maybe you wait until after week four against Brady and the Buccaneers. But I do think, listen, There's no need to rush Mac Jones early on. If Cam is playing well enough to start, then he starts. And then if he starts to fail, if he starts to fall apart, at least you have somebody, hopefully, fingers crossed, you can go to and say, well, now the future is happening. Like, the future is now. We're handing the keys to Mac. We gave Cam a shot. He played well enough at camp. He played well enough in the preseason to start the season. The guys were behind him. And it was his opportunity, and he failed, and now his NFL career as a starting quarterback is probably over. But I do think Mac at some point plays, because I'm with you, Greg. Whether it's week one, week five, week 10, inevitably, I just can't see Cam consistently playing at a high enough level to keep Mac Jones from taking the gig. If Jones plays up to par, if he's able to show us even more glimpses than he showed us at mandatory minicamp, I think he's good enough. And I think he fits with this offense better. And I think he can run the offense better. So inevitably that will happen. Let's talk about the crowded PUP list. A bunch of names. I'll quickly run through them. And then you can pick some of the names that jump out to you the most. We've got Kyle Van Noy, Trent Brown, Stephon Gilmore, obviously, is on there. That's no surprise. Chase Winovich is on there. Somewhat of a surprise, Jarrett Stidham. That kind of came out of nowhere. Byron Coart, you had said beforehand, when we went over the defensive roster. This is a pretty important camp for him, and he's trying to stay on here. Linebacker Terrence Hall, Dalton Keene, linebacker Brandon King, and then Devin Asiasi due to COVID. According to reports, Asiasi is fully vaccinated. The reason why we bring that up is because it actually makes a difference. Because he's fully vaccinated, he doesn't have to sit around for 10 days. If he gets negative tests, I think it's back-to-back days, he can come back, which is gigantic for him. I mean, when I first saw this, I said, oh, man, if he's out 10 days, what the hell? That's not what you need for him. But because he's fully vaxxed and he's got, again, reportedly minor symptoms, hopefully he's back sooner rather than later. You start and run with it. You let me know which ones jump out to you the most and why, Greg.
Okay, so let's start with the ones, Kyle Van Noy and Trent Brown. And so to me, seeing that they came on late today. So today, to let people know, Tuesday, people report to the Patriots. They go through physicals, all that stuff. So maybe they didn't pass their physical. The conditioning run is also on this day. Okay. And so to me, that signifies that they might not have passed their conditioning. Now, I'm not saying that happened, and I don't know anything about that, but that's normally the way things work in the NFL, is that if you're added late, it means either they caught something on the physical or you failed your conditioning run. So they could clear tomorrow morning. Well, I think Kyle Van Noy has a better chance than Trent Brown, but we'll have to see. Winovich, you know, a little bit surprising because he missed the offseason. And so, you know, what's he dealing with? Stidham, yes. Big surprise. I don't know what he's dealing with. It's concerning. And I'll just say this, you know, and you mentioned it, and we'll also deal with the rookies that are on the NFI list. You know, we knew McGrone and Bledsoe, they were hurt when the Patriots drafted them.
Right.
But Ramondre Stevenson, the running back, he was out there in practices. He might have missed something towards the end, mini camps, things like that. But, you know, you lump Jarrett Stidham, Cowart, Keene, Devin Asiasi, even if he gets out there. When young guys miss practices, I don't care if it's one or two or three or what have you, it's bad and it's not good. It's hard, especially for rookies. It's very hard for them to make up that ground. And so I'm concerned. And frankly, Nick, when I was, you know, putting our rundown together, like, I'm a little bit bummed that, you know, a lot of these guys are not going to be out there. Like, I was looking forward to, you know, what's happening on edge with, you know, Chase Winovich and Kyle Van Noy and all these guys. And now, you know, two of them are already out, at least for a certain amount of time. Byron Cowart's, I think, in a roster battle on the interior. And so he can't lose ground. Devin Asiasi, we talked about it. I thought he showed some promise in the spring. And so I was looking forward to him sort of asserting himself and maybe grabbing that number three tight end spot. Dalton Keene, we talked about him at length a few podcasts ago, where I'm just like, you know, if they have two tight ends, how many fullbacks are they going to keep? You know, is he really a tight end? You know, what are they going to do? This is not going to help. You have your two third round rookies from a year ago who got off the very slow starts, and now they're off the slow starts in this camp. So I'm disappointed because I was looking forward to seeing a Patriots team that was at full go with everybody. They have a lot of ground to cover. They have a lot of gelling to do if they really want to be a really good football team this year. And a lot of that stuff, David Andrews talked about it today, the camaraderie in camp is the biggest thing, and learning your teammates. And they have a lot of new teammates. This is uncharted waters for the Patriots, and that they have to acclimate not only rookies, but a bunch of veterans into what they're doing. And so the quicker everybody can be on the field, the better. I'm still very optimistic about this season, but having these guys still sort of in the stall as they're starting camp is mildly concerning to me.
Well, Trent Brown is somewhat of a concern because of his history, and we've mentioned that a few times. You've been all over that. Is he going to be in shape? Can he stay in shape? We know that when everybody left the facility after minicamp, Brown stayed. So is he not in shape? Is it another issue? Is it a tweak? We don't know, but he is a guy that, again, he's got a history that might lead you to some questioning whether or not he'll be ready, which would be a problem to me. Dalton Keene is also one that sticks out to me, as you mentioned, because this is a big, big, big season for him, and he's got to prove himself. And the same goes for Asiasi. I mean, I say less about Asiasi because I don't know the situation. He obviously got COVID. Again, he's fully vaccinated, so I don't know what happened there. Hopefully, he's back sooner rather than later. But the last thing you wanted to see was, you know, these two young tight ends who did not have a chance at a preseason last year. And we've said this throughout the offseason, right? At least for me, when I look at the rookies from last year, they get a pass. And I know some people don't agree with that. I know some people say, oh, you can't. I give them a pass because of the circumstances. I said, I'm not going to bury a rookie last year given COVID and everything that was going on. But they needed to show themselves, you know, as a developing entity for this roster, so they could make the roster. And if you're getting off to that slow start this preseason, it's just not great. So hopefully Asiasi gets those negative tests and he's back quickly. And hopefully it's nothing serious with Keene and he can come back as well. As far as Ramondre Stevenson, your thoughts on him, Greg? I know some people were saying it was going to be pretty much a redshirt season for him anyway. I don't think you necessarily bought that from the jump. But could this be what we're seeing, or is this kind of an unexpected snafu in this dude's rookie season?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a surprise, Nick. I do think that, look, the running backs around here as rookies, they typically don't play. So you could certainly say that he was headed for a redshirt year. But I think the possibility was that if he popped, if he was a good player and he looked like that he could take a lot of snaps should Damian Harris go down, then maybe it makes Sony Michel expendable, who's going into his final year. They did not pick up his fifth year option. Of course, the Rams suffered a big injury with Cam Akers tearing his Achilles. So people naturally were like, oh, Bill should be on the phone and Sony Michel. They have guys that they can, plenty of good backs there, but the only way Sony Michel in my mind becomes expendable is if a guy like Stevenson steps up and Bill even mentioned it today. He's like, you know, sometimes you have guys who start fast and fizzle. Sometimes you have guys who start slow and then, you know, build their play throughout camp. And you have other guys who, you know, especially at a running back position, I know traditionally it hasn't hit quickly here. But in a lot of other places, running backs don't have a problem playing early. And so
right.
I think the possibility was there that he could step up, earn some time, and possibly get the Patriots thinking about trading Sony Michel and getting an asset for that. But, you know, if this lingers, you know, past a week, I think it's going to be tough for him to do much of anything this year.
Yeah, I would say if there's one room that you might be able to survive without, you know, somebody being a part of it for a week or so, it would be running back. I think they've got some depth there. Of course, that counts on both guys that have always kind of been dinged up a little bit, right? Damian Harris has had his issues. We know Sony Michel. But if those two guys are healthy, you've got James White, you've got J.J. Taylor, you've got Brandon Bolden. I still feel pretty good about that spot. I'd be yep. more concerned about the depth behind the tight ends, especially given Jonnu Smith, who missed mandatory minicamp, and Hunter Henry's, you know, history. I think Dalton Keene and Asiasi, again, pretty big there. All right, we got more questions for Greg, a lot more information for all of you guys and gals. But first, Bedard again was on vacation. He was bragging to me before we actually started recording this thing about how he enjoyed some Cuban rounds up in Maine. Tell me about it, Greg.
Yeah, Nick, look, it's the best time of year. Summer's in full swing. Grills are heating up and sports are in full swing. And now we have football season coming. Look, that calls for a celebration. Go ahead and enjoy. The only thing left to do is get yourself a Cuban round cigar. Whether you're celebrating your college graduation or just hanging out and enjoying the weather, Cuban rounds are bringing you the taste of Havana. I got to say, Nick, so me and the family went up to Maine. We were out in the middle of nowhere up there, but we were on a lake, had a beautiful, you know, outdoor fire, dock, stuff like that. I went down there. I took one of, I took a handful of the Cuban rounds with me. And I got to say, like, look, I'm not the biggest cigar guy around, but I smoke them over the years. And I, you know, I like a good one. And I got to tell you, I was surprised at how smooth these cigars were, how the quality of them, they're handcrafted, they're all natural. They're really well balanced. And it's reminiscent of Cuban mastery. And they say these are Havana inspired. And trust me, I believe it. It's refined, nuanced, perfect. Each smoke highlights the quality of the leaves and the complexity of the tobacco within. Cuban Rounds is built on accessible luxury. Their cigars boast a premium look and superior flavors. And look, I don't BS people on here, whether it's about the Patriots or anything else. And I got to say, these are really good. They came in a great looking box. They look really good. The smell was terrific. The draw was awesome. I really enjoyed it, just sitting around the fire, having one and just, you know, relaxing. And so, look, the last 2 years have been tough on all of us. Let loose and enjoy yourself with a Cuban Round cigar. They offer a luxurious experience with a high-quality product at an affordable price. A Cuban's Round Cigars is a guilty pleasure without the guilt, and now you can enjoy that yourself the right way. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook at Cuban Round Cigars. That's Cuban Rounds Cigars on Instagram and Facebook. And one legal disclaimer, Cuban Round Cigars are not available for sale to individuals under 21 years of age. Warning, cigars are not a safe alternative to cigarettes. Nick, I got to send you some of these so you can enjoy them down in Virginia. Maybe you're not getting as much rain as we are up here. So you probably got a nice deck that you can enjoy one. So I got to send you some of these because I'm telling you, they're good.
I'm ready. Cuban Rounds. Check them out again on Instagram and on Twitter. Back to the football, Greg, we look at the wide receiver position, Mike Thomas's injury down in New Orleans. I immediately thought, hey, well, you know, that's a team that Belichick might be able to call, or maybe Sean Payton calls his buddy Bill and says,
nope,
hey,
different Patriot.
What's going on at wide receiver and what's up, especially with Harry? I mean, we haven't heard anything. There was the request via social media. We talked about it. And then we found out that Harry would show up to camp. Not surprising, of course. He has to show up to camp. But what's going on? I mean, it's been pretty silent since that request from his agent, Greg.
Man, how about you know, you're thinking about a Patriots receiver to New Orleans. Little did you know it was going to be Chris Hogan.
Yes.
Who can't decide what is he, a lacrosse player or football player or what?
How long was the lacrosse career? Was it 2 months? Was that it? He tried it and said, all right, it's not working out. He got traded, didn't he? He started with the Boston Cannons, and then he got dealt. And then all of a sudden, 3 weeks later, he's signing with the Saints.
I think, I don't know whose career was longer, Jonas Gray as a starter or lead back for the Patriots, or Chris Hogan as a professional lacrosse player, but. Yeah, that was a little blow. So, yeah, I mean, I just love Belichick today. He was asked about it, and he just basically, like, flicked the N'Keal Harry trade request. Of course, even with Stephon Gilmore, we don't talk contracts and blah, blah, blah. Look, I think wide receiver is a very interesting group in camp. I mean, you know, not only do you have the newcomers in Aguilar and Bourne trying to see what they have, where they fit, how they're going to get on the field with two tight ends that we assume are going to be out there a lot. But you also have Jacoby Myers and N'Keal Harry. And I will be keeping a close eye on N'Keal Harry during camp just to see if, you know, after this trade request, because this is virtually unprecedented with the Patriots that a player who has accomplished so little has gone public to demand a trade from the Patriots. And as an added bonus, his agent basically pointed the finger at the Patriots on why he wasn't getting enough chances. So it'll be interesting to see how the quarterbacks, how the fellow receivers, how Mick Lombardi, the receivers coach, how Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick all react to N'Keal Harry. But look, Nick, I'm still in the same place. I still, you know, like I said before, I'm disappointed in Nikhil because I still think there is a good football in that body, and he's just got to give it. This was going to be his one good go. You know, we've talked about all the built-in excuses that he's had, and he had a chance. I still think that chance is there. And so maybe, I don't know, maybe his agent knows his client and sort of lights a fire under him. I don't know, but it will certainly be something that we'll be monitoring throughout camp.
I'm interested in Nikhil Harry for obvious reasons. You mentioned them. The other guy I'm interested in a lot is Bourne. Like, I want to see who he is, what he is out there. I've seen him play for San Francisco. I've seen him play a decent amount, but San Francisco is a pretty tough place. They spread the football around. They run the football a ton. As we know, they didn't always trust Jimmy Garoppolo, even though, again, Shanahan and company named Garoppolo the starting quarterback for the season today. Whether that lasts or not, who knows? Trey Lance, not signed yet. Zach Wilson, not signed yet. Nobody's talking about it. Two of the top three picks, not in camp yet. We'll see how that works out for those teams. But Bourne interests me. Like, I know what Aguilar is. I know who he is. I've seen him play. I know what he can do and what he can't do, and I'm ready for that. I've seen Jonnu Smith play a ton. I'm kind of just interested in Bourne, and I've read a lot of good things about him. Seems like he could be an under-the-radar kind of guy, so he piques my interest. Let's see what happens with him. Speaking of the new guys, how fast do they get up to speed? I mean, this free agency period, we went through it. I said during my time on WEEI that, you know, you look back to 2020, and I think Patriots fans wouldn't necessarily mind if 2020 ends up being a speed bump and not a crater that Yep. the car that was driven by Belichick just fell into the crater, and that was that. And I think, you know, the first thing Belichick had to do was be aggressive, understand that the roster needed retooling, and take advantage of opportunity. He did that. I mean, I don't have any complaints about this offseason. I really don't. Is it going to work? I don't know. What it depends on, first and foremost, these guys figuring out what they have to do and getting up to speed. Your thoughts on that, Greg?
Yeah, I think this is another one of those areas. People always ask me, like, Greg, you know, what are you going to be watching in camp? How do you prioritize what's going on, players on two fields, things like that? And, you know, look, it's not easy. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to deal, because the quarterbacks are so important, because 7-on-7s usually go on at the same time that the 1-on-1 pass blocking drills go on. And everybody knows how much I love those pass blocking drills. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I basically, like, you know, I take notes, and then I roll around in those notes once it's over.
Get you going.
I got to get a little dirt going on, you know, on my chest and things like that. You know, I got to get ready for it. And so that's going to be tough. But one of the things I will be watching is, and I'll probably rotate every day with a couple of guys. You can't see everybody every day. It's impossible. But out of the new guys, there will be, you know, a two or three that I watch every single day that I'm looking for the little things. You know, are they running the right routes? Are they having to be corrected? Are people showing frustration with them? Are they frustrated? Because like I said before, this is unprecedented with the Patriots that they have such an influx of talent, and a lot of it, you know, we've seen in years past, Nick, where the Patriots, you know, they'll bring in a handful of veteran players to plug the gap. And look, that's how the dynasty basically started with a lot of those guys with the Patriots that they brought in, a lot of, you know, journeymen and veterans. But they've never brought in this high-priced talent, but also young talent. These are guys that are not in their prime. They're not on the downside of their career. The Patriots are betting that they're on the upswing, that they got them before they hit their prime.
Right.
And they paid prime numbers for Aguilar, the tight ends. You know, we know about Trent Brown and there's some other guys, but
Judon.
These guys are vital. Yeah. Judon. Great, great one, Nick. These guys are vital to what the Patriots are going to do. And so they need to get up to speed. It's not guaranteed for a lot of these guys. And so the faster they get acclimated and really play fast. And that's the big thing. There's knowing what's going on, and there's playing fast where you don't have to think about things. That with the Patriots on defense and on offense, especially, that's where newcomers have an issue. And so that's what I'll be watching to see, all right, this guy is now playing fast. Now they can start doing some things with player X. And so that's going to be a huge key in this camp.
All right, up next, let's go to special teams. I know everybody's pumped about this. If my guy Adam Jones ever listens to this podcast, which he probably doesn't, but if he does listen, he knows special teams. He'll be going crazy right now. He loves that. Kicking competition. Now, Nick Folk was unfreaking believable last year, especially given the expectations. I don't know if any of us expected Folk to be a Folk legend when he's out there kicking bombs and you know, one of the highlights of the 2020 season with Nick Folk. Is there a kicking competition? Is your guy Quinn Nordin making some noise? What's going on?
I don't know. I know a lot of people are trying to push that narrative, and who knows? But I have a hard time seeing it. I mean, you're talking about a guy in Nordin who was very up and down at Michigan and was not reliable. And look, Folk was awesome last year, as you said. I did not think that he had a great offseason when he was there, and I think he only came to the mini camp, which probably didn't go over great with Belichick. I have a hard time just in one offseason, all of a sudden Quinn Nordin fixes everything that ailed him up in Ann Arbor and suddenly is, you know, Greg the Leg or Sebastian Janikowski or what have you all of a sudden. Like, I have a hard time seeing that, and I have a harder time seeing Bill Belichick with Nick. Let's face it, this team, just like last year, is going to have a very small margin of error in every game. Like, until maybe the second half of the season, I have a hard time seeing them blowing anybody out. And so everything is going to count. Bill loves special teams. I have a hard time seeing him going with a guy with a nuclear weapon for a right leg, but you're not sure where it's going to go. And so I have a hard time seeing that, but who knows? We'll see. I mean, this is something we would probably talk more in depth about midway through camp.
We talked about the running back position. I know you had a note about the crowded backfield. Anything else to add to that, or we're good?
I would just say in something we've talked about before, the James White, J.J. Taylor dynamic. I think that J.J. Taylor is a guy who, if I had to pick one guy in offense who's going to pop in this camp, I think it's going to be Taylor. And what does that mean? How does he fit into the crowded backfield? What does that mean for James White, who's on a pretty modest one-year deal here, who did not have much action on the free agent market? Could J.J. Taylor supplant James White? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. It's unlikely. James White struggled last season. He struggled in the offseason. If that continues, I think that's something to monitor.
Yeah, and I think, you know, listen, we all love James White. And yep. I had tweeted last year, right after the season was over, you know, I said he went through a lot of crap last year. And people said, oh, crap. You know, and I'm like, yeah, crap. And I know some people thought it was me being, you know, lacking heart. That wasn't the point. I mean, when you go through stuff, when you go through trauma and tragedy and all, I say stuff, right? I say another word for it. But if I'm talking to my buddy and, you know, he's gone through a lot over the last year, I'll say, man, you went through a lot of ish. You know, you went. And so that's kind of what happened with James White. He went through a lot of stuff last year, a lot of tough stuff, a lot of, you know, losing his dad and his mom was in bad shape for a while in the hospital, and on the field, he didn't perform. And you have to imagine that some of that had to do with some of the things that were going on with him. And there was this thought that maybe he goes back down to Florida closer to his mom and, you know, maybe stays with family. And so I know people, we have an attachment. I have an attachment. If you've watched this team long enough and, you know, again, we all love James White. He always says the right things and he's a good interview. He's a thoughtful guy. He seems like a really good guy. But Belichick, as we know, this isn't about who's the best guy, who the nicest guy is. And on the field, you grade who James White was last year. You don't think about, you know, personally how it affects him as much as you, you know, try to fight that. It is what it is, as Bill would say. And last year, he was not the same James White. And he did not have a good minicamp. And I think if he looks the same during the next several weeks, I would not be surprised if White is gone. And I think people have to try to, as hard as it is, you know, draw that line. You got to draw that hard line between personal and professional. And Belichick's got one job, and that's to get the best 53 guys. And if he doesn't see it from White and he thinks White, we know this, running backs, happens all the time. If White has fallen off a cliff, Bill's going to be the guy to know. And I would not be surprised if Taylor does take White. I would hope that White makes it again, because he's come up so huge in the biggest of moments, including when he should have won the MVP at the Super Bowl years ago. But if it's it, it's it. That's the nature of that position, man. It's really, really tough. BostonSportsJournal.com member question of the day. Check them out over at BSJ. $39.99 on the annual plan. Top-notch analysis of all the Boston pro sports. And if you're a Pats junkie, which if you're listening to this, you are, a membership at BSJ gives you access to a ton of video analysis that Bedard does on the coaches' film and direct access to him in weekly chats. Greg, an interesting story over the past week or so. As the NFL continues to deal with COVID and the vaccination rates and all of that, we saw Cole Popovich, offensive line coach, one of two, be let go by the organization. And according to reports, it had everything to do with him not being vaccinated. How big of a loss is Popovich, Greg?
Well, at first, I didn't think it was much of a loss. And that's really where I am at the end of the day, mostly because, you know, so Carmen Brasillo, you know, from what I know, he was the main offensive line coach last year. Popovich does. It was his first year as an NFL offensive line coach. You know, same as Carmen. But Carmen had a longer history. He was at Youngstown State as the offensive line coach for a long time. You know, played at Duquesne. Long history of coaching the position. Popovich did it some. He was also a college offensive lineman. But Carmen was really the more senior guy from what I've been able to understand about the situation. And Popovich also, you know, he had been like sort of a low-level Patriots assistant. He had been at like, Minot State. That's where he came from before he came to the Patriots, when he was just a coaching assistant, then assistant running backs coach. So in my mind, Brasillo was the main offensive line coach. But look, these guys worked well together last year to sort of make up for Dante Scarnecchia's retirement, to the point where we really didn't even talk about it, because the line was really good last year and dealing with a lot of stuff, you know, from different injuries, Marcus Cannon not being there, you know, Andrews having some issues here and there. And, you know, they were able to get, you know, what's the rookie's name? Who was the rookie last year? It's slipping my mind. The offensive lineman.
Owenu?
Good job. Yeah. You know, to get Mike Owenu up to speed to the point where you could make arguments that he should have gotten votes for offensive rookie of the year as a 6th-round pick. I mean, that was tremendous. So those guys did a tremendous job, and they did it working together. And now it's just one. Maybe I assume they're going to have somebody help out. I'm sure there are other offensive assistants that can help out with that if needed. So it's not great. And then I heard David Andrews today talk about, he was asked about the change, and he said something along the lines of, you know, I've had 3 offensive line coaches since I've been here. And he said, well, now 4. Okay. So, I mean, did he view Popovich as more of the offensive line coach? Maybe Popovich took the interior guys, and Brasillo, you know, dealt with the tackles more. I don't know how that went, but I don't think it's significant. The Patriots know what they're doing. It's a veteran group now, not a lot of green guys. They have Ted Karras coming back, who could probably – he's probably going to help out coaching the line, for crying out loud. You know, how many times he's been here and how smart he is. He would be a great coach down the line now that I say it out loud. So I don't think it's a huge deal. It's not great, but if you're asking me, do I expect the offensive line to take a step back because Cole Popovich isn't there anymore? No, that's not happening. I think this group is going to be outstanding. I think it's going to be one of the best in the league. And I'm more worried about the quarterbacks getting the protections and diagnosing things more to make sure the offense is working right than the play of the offensive line.
This offensive line should be a top five offensive line in football this year if they're healthy. And I agree with you. I don't think Cole Popovich is the difference between that happening and not happening. I can't imagine that being the case with as much talent as they have. Bedard, straight off of vacation, straight out of Maine, sucking on Cuban rounds, drinking beers, hanging out by the fire with the wife and the kids, going to see Chris Sale. I mean, this guy's done everything over the last week, and now he's back at home, getting ready for another football season. We're all excited for it. Training camp is here. It is official. My guy Bedard will be all over it. We'll be all over it. It's the Greg Bedard Patriots podcast with Nick Cattles. Again, brought to you by our friends at Cuban Rounds, a handcrafted, all-natural, and affordably priced cigar that is Havana-inspired. Until next time, be good.